VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 402, recorded on October 16th, 2015. Welcome to the 402nd edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and the 235th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am Jonah Falk.
And I am Scott Durr.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry. So, this is a new recording day on Friday. At least one person realized that the day was changed and wrote in. It was a very brief message, but, you know, at least it's something. Scott, what have you been playing?
Well, I played and completed the Minecraft story mode.
Okay. Which was episode one.
It was a very fast-paced game, and it felt like the difficulty was very low. I guess it was made for just anybody to be able to play and not get too frustrated with or anything. It was mostly about character choices and whatnot, and there's really only one actual puzzle towards the end of the game.
Mild crafting in it?
Yeah, but it's not like you'd be like, think about it. They pretty much tell you, too. They're holding your hand a lot in this game.
Well, keep in mind, this game, I think, is intended for 10-year-olds.
Yeah, and there are some pretty smart 10-year-olds, but still.
Here's the thing, is that the writing, they basically telegraph the type of choices you're going to have to make. From what I understand. So, yeah, it's basically,
Of the Telltale games, I've only played Back to the Future. So, this whole variance of path and choices and stuff, because I watched some Let's Plays.
Back to the Future is different. That one doesn't have many. That's pretty linear for a Telltale game.
Yeah, it was. It was very linear. And this one does have choices, but you pretty much seem to end up at all the milestone things anyways, because there was some stuff that I thought I was going to be able to avoid if I made different choices, but you have to deal with
you can never avoid anything. What Telltale games tend to do is they tend to remember your choices for later episodes, and they'll remember the choices that you made and how characters react. I mean, but generally it'll basically be the same ending, just with a few flavors. The only one that I saw that really diverted from that was The Walking Dead Season 2, in which it had several different endings, but even then, you were stuck with the same two people that you had to choose between.
I think I would like really different endings and different gameplays. Not necessarily avoid, but like alternate. Like, there was this game, Indiana Jones and the Fate of Atlantis.
Okay.
And you could choose three ways to play the game. Action, teamwork, or solo adventure by yourself. And each path was a different way of playing the game. If you did action, you would be fighting like all the time, and you would do certain sequences completely different because you're fighting stuff. And if you did teamwork, you would work with Sophia to solve puzzles and whatnot. And if you did it all by yourself, then, you know, even that was different.
I prefer more of something that's like Mass Effect, in which, I know there's the three endings, but even then, even before that, before the four endings, actually, you choose who's going to be there with you at the end, basically, you know?
Yeah.
If you screwed over the Krogan, if you saved both the Geth and the Quarians and that sort of thing. So the story didn't really change. It's just that who you're with changed and how they react to you change, you know?
Chrono Trigger had several different endings, depending on when you beat it and who you beat it with.
If you want different endings, there's also Blade Runner, the Westwood game from 1997. And one of the things about that game was that everything was randomized of who was a replicant and who was not. So you always had different endings depending on who was a replicant and who was not, so it was always a different game every time you played. But the thing is that, you know, what I would want from a Minecraft story mode is a little less linear and have you be able to explore and or at least the story holds until you accomplish several things. Like, the story won't continue until you build a house, right?
Yeah.
And you have to do something like that. You know, that sort of thing. You know, in which, you know, it asks you to do stuff that's in Minecraft.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with Minecraft is you don't just have to build. There are pre-made adventure maps that you can explore. There are game show stuff that you can
play. Yeah, but in this case, you're walking and talking, and you have other characters, and you have to make decisions. I just mean, you know, for the story mode, you know, you have to do certain things that are Minecraft, you know, that'll take you a little bit.
It did feel like a shallow dip into what Minecraft can do.
It is just episode one, though.
Yeah, that's true.
As for me, I've been playing board games. I played Between Two Cities, which is an interesting game in which you have to build two cities, one on your left and one on your right, and you're playing against everybody. However, your two neighbors, you have to help them build that city. So you're both trying to build the best city you possibly can, but you're also helping the other person win if you do it, you know, if you do it well, but you don't have a choice, you know. So you have to negotiate with the people you're trying to beat. So, oh, listen, I want to do that tile, because if we do that tile, I can put this tile, and we can get that combo. Oh, and you know, this, you know, so it's really interesting.
It does sound interesting. I think it's kind of making me think of Tale of Two Cities.
Well, the thing is that it's also very simple. I would almost call it Carcassonne, in which you have to build a 4x4 city, and you have to make that 4x4 box, and the only thing that changes the value of a city is the type. There are six type of regions, and they all want different things, like markets want to be in a row, houses want variety, but they don't want to be next to a factory. Whoever has the most factories gets the most point per factory, that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, it's sort of like that game, I think it's called Suburbia, I'm not sure, but there, you're building your own city, and no one else, you know, and no one else can control it. Here, you're building two cities, and you're sharing them.
Mm-hmm.
And whoever has the highest score of the lowest scoring city that's adjacent to them, wins. So, you know, if you're boarded by a 60-point city and a 54-point city, you get 54 points, right? So you can't bomb someone, you know, if it's like, oh, I'm sorry, this is going to be a 20-point, but I don't care because, you know, it doesn't, no, you have to, because if there's a 20-point city next to you, then that's going to be your score, you know, so.
Wow.
It also has a single-player mode, which I have not tried yet. And what it does is it puts two automated cities, and you draw cards, and it tells you, you draw these cards, and it tells you how they're going to build for that turn, right? It'll say, if you have to build a house if it's available. If there's no house available, then you have to build these instructions, right? These if-or instructions. So that's how that works. Otherwise, I've been playing also, I got a new table for Pinball FX2. And it's the Plant vs. Zombies table, and it's a really fun table. So you're
that sounds like fun.
You actually have the zombies at some point, sometimes crawling towards you, and you have to knock them down with a pinball.
It kind of reminds me of I don't know. I miss playing Stratego. You ever played that?
Stratego? Yeah.
Yeah, that was a board game.
Yes, I know. Let me ask you a question. Where did you put the flag?
Oh, I would hide it in all sorts of different places. Sometimes the corners, sometimes in the middle, sometimes like, you know, middle back or behind one.
Did you ever, you know, have it where, what's it called, in the corner there'd be a bomb?
Yeah, or I would try to, it was a lot of psychological warfare as well.
You know what my favorite part was? It was capturing ones with nines. This is my nine, he's going to kill your one. And this is my eight, it's going to take out your bomb, so there. I haven't played Stratego in a couple of decades, so.
I also finished playing the King's Quest game. I completed that. I feel really proud of myself completing games, not just starting them. So this is a week of finishing games.
Okay.
But they're pretty short, so it's not too much.
Yeah, my patience for NBA 2K16 has hit its high point. Level and
well,
I'm
that's
just
a sports game. You can never really finish.
No, it's just that, you know, the defenses are too psychic and it just ruins the game for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just, you know, saying screw it. No more aggravation. I'm done with you.
Good idea.
Yeah. What else? Oh yeah, Tomb Raider the Definitive Edition was free, so I downloaded that, and I played the first part of it, which is basically one long tutorial. The first part of the tutorial. I'll start playing it again, but here's the thing, is that there's several big games coming. I know for you it's in 2 weeks, or 3 weeks actually, for Fallout. By the way, I was disappointed to hear that the actor who played Three Dog in Fallout 3 is not going to be in Fallout 4, even though he was supposed to be first announced. I wouldn't have minded some more Three Dog, you know? I miss Three Dog. But also, Halo is coming out in 2 weeks. Oh, I canceled my $250 order of Halo 5, and I got the $99 version, which is the same as the $250 version, except it doesn't have a gigantic statue, which I have no need for. I don't need... It could have been anything, but yet another frickin' statue. You know, there's no place to put it.
Yeah.
The $99 version comes with all these bonuses and all that stuff. And here's the weird thing, is that... Now, the game uses something called rec cards, right? REQ, requisition cards. And it's basically like in Titanfall, you know. You get a rec card, however you get it, and it becomes something in the game. Like, oh, you open it up, oh, I got a tank for a mission. That sort of stuff, right? Microsoft, everything that's associated with Halo 5 comes with a rec card. Like, they're selling these earbuds, these Halo-themed earbuds, which look really nice, and they come with a rec card. A code for a rec card. So it's like everything's coming with a rec card. And I have to admit, it's kind of neat. You know, store is going to be licensing Halo stuff. Like, I think they did it with either it was Taco Bell or 7-Eleven, right, that did the Halo stuff. I can just imagine it if you go to a 7-Eleven and order a big gulp, you get also, oh, here's a rec code card for rec card code for you. Yes, I'd like a, oh, thank you for the big gulp. Oh, I got another rec card. Oh, let me get these Halo-themed shoes. Oh, look, a couple of rec card codes. You know? And it actually is an ingenious way to get people to play Halo and also to get them to buy this stuff. You know, well, I could buy the sneakers from this place, but if I buy the sneakers from this place, they're the same price, and I'm getting some stuff for Halo 5. it's the Skylanders thing for Halo. They're just not doing figurines. They're doing rec cards.
I miss quality collector's editions and whatnot. I remember I got Ultima 9.
Yes, I have that. I have that humongous frickin' box. It's right there on my shelf. I did not throw the disc away. I did not throw the box away. I just played it, and I feel sorry for Ultima 9 because it was basically the Elder Scrolls, but it didn't have the technology for it.
It's a horrible travesty what happened to that game.
I remember, I think it was Computer Gaming World called the box the world's biggest roach motel.
Yeah. But yeah, I liked getting the little Ankh, and I liked the leather-bound books, and they were just, it was really nice.
They're still in the box. I haven't looked inside the box in years and years and years.
What?
But what I do see is my Halo 3, what's it called, Collector's Edition, and that comes with a book as well, which I haven't read.
I think the Myst Collector's Edition had a leather book where you can write in it a little journal, so you can write all their... puzzles and whatnot. I mean, that was cool.
But the regular edition of Halo, of Ultima 4 and Ultima 3 came with maps and books and coins. I think I still have my Ultima 3 coin somewhere here.
Lunar Blues Collector Edition actually came with the amulet that you see in the game.
Yeah.
It was like nice and heavy and metallic. It was really cool.
Yeah, but then again, those games were hella expensive. I mean, Ultima 4 in 1984 money cost $74. $74, yeah. And I'm going to go to the inflation calculator, and we're going to see how much $74 was, in today's money.
Oh, I thought that was today's money, because I don't remember that game being that expensive.
It was. I got it at Chips and Bits. Let's see. Actually, it was $84, It was $84, not 74. $84 in 1984 was Oh, God. $84 in 1984 was $192 now.
Wow.
Now, also, you have to remember, and if Paul was here, he could back us up on this. You had the NES carts that cost $70. You remember that?
Or
Super Nintendo. No, I'm sorry. Super Nintendo carts that cost $70. Yes, there were.
I remember only paying $30 to $40. So
no, some of them were $70.
I was at Toys R Us, so it wasn't like I was.
No, well, anyways, I'm just saying we're spending a crap ton on stuff. I mean, Zork cost $50 in 1980. You know, so yeah, now the costs are way, 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 way down.
Oh yeah, you can buy lots of stuff on Steam.
Because let me see. Now let's reverse this. Let's do $60. Which is the cost of games today, right? In 2015, would it cost in 1984? So basically, full price games, $60 games that we're buying right now, would it cost $26.20 in 1984? So we're paying for budgetware prices on these games. If of course, you know, now we have games that are on the iPad and you know, and all that stuff for 99 cents, so, you know, it's...
Yeah.
So, actually, we're paying a quarter for those, and that would be like putting a quarter into a Space Invaders for a one-time deal.
Yeah, you are getting what you pay for. A lot of these dollar games are, you know, dollar really worth it, and they're not... you're not buying Elder Scroll or Fallout for a dollar.
But, you know, anyways, that's what I've been playing. You know, you can download, I remember getting Ultima 4, the full game, on a disc from PC Gamer, and it was 784 kilobytes, which is something, if I wanted to, I could email you the entire Ultima 4.
Yeah, there's, you probably download a lot of games on GOG and have small little, easily
send. Yeah. Anyways, we're going to move on to news, and the first news actually broke today, which is why it's on the top. EA data leak on Pastebin exposes emails and passwords, and this comes from Game Watcher, which, by the way, I write for now, so everybody, you go to GameWatcher.com. Electronic Arts has suffered a major security breach when someone uploaded a document on Pastebin that contained private personal details, including email addresses and passwords. The document was removed, but it had hundreds of Origin accounts that began with letters A through F, as well as registered Mass Effect and Star Wars Battlefront users. An ex-Origin employee, Sam Houston, or if it was in New York, I guess we'd be calling her Sam Houston, wouldn't we? Wait a minute. Sam Houston is an actual name of a historical figure. This person is named after Sam Houston.
Yeah, sometimes people do that.
Did she meet her at Alamo? It is speculating that the document was the result of a hack into Electronic Arts' databases, stating, "Gamers are often targeted with attacks, and EA's accounts are tied all into their games, and their Origin e-commerce site with a Gamers EA account can be very valuable." Houston added, I don't know how she pronounces her name. Gaining access to an EA account would enable a hacker to play any of their PC games purchased through Origin, and could potentially be used to play on a gamer's account on a game connected via EA account system. Those accounts are valuable not only for financial gain, but also for harassing or impersonating users. EA Senior Director John Rosenberg doused this, saying, "At this point, we have no indication that this list was obtained through an intrusion of our account databases, and EA has taken an action to secure the exposed accounts. In an abundance of caution, we are taking steps to secure any account that has an EA user ID that matches the usernames on this list," which I'm guessing is that if you log into your Origin account, it's going to ask you for verification. So, yeah.
It does sound like a good idea just to make sure your account is hasn't been...
You're breaking up. Say it again. You broke up.
Okay, I was just saying it's good that they have verification so they can make sure your account is legit and hasn't been compromised.
Yeah, I have just one question. If this document wasn't posted on Pastebin by someone who intruded, then how did it get there?
Yeah, why was it on Pastebin? That is weird.
I mean, there is one, and that's someone, some clerk at EA really screwed up and accidentally, what's it called? Oh, I didn't need to upload that. You know? But I find that highly unlikely as well. I'm inclined to believe there was a hacker here.
Never underestimate the capability of human stupidity. There are some really stupid people out there.
I mean, but then again, if this was a hacker account, why would it only do A through F? Right?
There are several million people, and a
even so,
does add up. So A through F may be a couple hundred thousand right there.
Even so, you know, you'd think that they would post all three, A through F, G through M, M through N through Z.
Could have been an inside job. I don't know.
Yeah, or it could have been just one big humongous screw up.
Mm-hmm. Very easily.
So, anyways, there is one thing though. No matter what. No matter what your account is, always regularly change your password. It doesn't even if it's the most secure thing in the world, just change it.
Yeah.
You know, unless because what'll happen is that you know unless you have someone like Matthew Broderick in War Games, in which they do change the password daily, but it's taped on the desk where everybody can read it. So.
Well, if people are getting into your house to get to your desk, then you have bigger problems.
Anyways, we're gonna move on to the next item. Go ahead.
Okay. Adobe confirms major Flash vulnerability from BGR. Just one day after Adobe released its monthly security patches for various software, including Flash Player, the company confirmed a major security vulnerability that affects all versions of Flash for Windows, Mac, and Linux computers. You read that correctly, all versions. Adobe said it had been made aware that this vulnerability is being used by hackers to attack users. Though it says the attacks are limited and targeted, using the exploit, an attacker can crash a target PC or even take complete control of the computer. And now for the fun part. The only way to effectively protect yourself against this serious security hole is to completely uninstall Flash Player from your machine. The company went to state that it hopes to make an update available sometime next week to address the critical security hole, though it is currently unclear exactly when it plans to release this fix. It's also not clear if all versions of Flash Player will be patched across all platforms. Today, Adobe rushed out a patch well ahead of schedule.
Yeah, that worries me when you rush out a patch. Mm-hmm. I uninstalled and reinstalled. I thought it might have screwed up a site, but then I'm getting word that it's not working for other people either, so it's not the Adobe Flash. It's something having to do with Google. You know, and here's the thing, is that they're phasing out Flash anyway. I mean, HTML5 is good enough for me. I don't need this. Here's the thing. My computer now has a shell crash. Now, for those who don't understand, sometimes a software will collapse and it'll take your Windows with it. So you'll have a shell crash in which you can't do anything except either try to log off your account or go into Task Manager and remove that file. Now, sometimes that doesn't work, and you need to get the stupid shell software that'll delete it. But in this case, whenever my computer crashes right now, it's because Adobe Flash is screwing up. You know, once I stop Flash using Task Manager, everything's okay again. Which tells me, you know, there's a lot of sites that are weaning themselves off Flash, but not enough, and it's screwing up. It's screwing up, you know, my computer. So please, if you're going to kill Flash, kill it now. And I discovered something. I don't need Flash to do YouTube anymore. Which I guess is maybe a concession to Apple, because Apple never used Flash. So for a long time, it had to have special software to do YouTube, right? You couldn't do it through your browser because iOS doesn't pay attention to Flash.
This may explain why Apple never used Flash if they knew about this.
No, I don't think it's because it has vulnerability. No, in Apple's case, they just didn't want to pay Adobe. They didn't want to pay them. That's all. You know, these browser companies, you know, they have to pay to use Flash.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have HTML5. You ever visit Homestar Runner?
Nope. Perfect.
Okay. It's a Flash animation site. Hilarious. Output is kind of scarce these days because they're making so much money on the merchandise. But yeah, Homestar Runner. Once you start watching the Strong Bad emails, you can't stop. Anyways, the thing is that they had this cartoon about the site collapsing because Flash was dying. Like, what's it called? Pieces of the browser started falling off. Say, look, it's so yeah. They have to quickly go to HTML5 because the entire site is completely Flash, right? So they're converting to HTML5 because they know it's going away.
Yeah, that's I don't know. I mean, I guess it makes no difference to me. So if it's something that needs to go away, and we'll just adapt to HTML5.
Yeah, there's a lot of Flash-based games though out there. See, that's the thing. And
yeah, like, here's the thing: I don't play any of them.
Well, I mean, the thing is that now Unity is such a big thing. Maybe Flash isn't that necessary either. There.
Yeah.
Everybody's using Unity now.
Yep.
So, anyways, before we move on to the next item, there is an item that was 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of old sauce, but I guess we could discuss it right now in brief, or not brief, and that is Microsoft had a little Microsoft's Spencer. I forgot his first name, damn it.
Oh, Bill? Phil Spencer, yeah.
Phil Spencer, right. And I said Bill, not Phil. Hey, what's your name? Phil. Philip Phil. Does anybody get that reference?
Kermit?
Yep, from the Muppet movie. I mean the Great Muppet Caper. See, I was wrong twice. It was the Muppets Take Manhattan. That was the first time Rizzo appeared as his own character.
Mm. My name is Phil, Philip Phil. Well, how about this? Ocean Breeze soap will get you clean.
Anyways, so Phil Spencer said that they weren't trying to catch Sony on the PS4 anymore. And that got a lot of attention around the web. But here's what he actually said, was that they are not concerned with catching the PS4 right now. They're just concerned with pleasing the fan base to keep the fan base satisfied for what they have right now. So they're selling Xbox Ones, and they're not concentrating on trying to catch the PS4, which got a huge leap because of their bottomless stupidity about how the Xbox One was launched. I mean, they actually had the sales drop first at 350. Dumping the Kinect, and now Sony just recently lowered their price to $350, I think a couple of days ago. So, yeah, I mean, you know.
How low can you go? How low can you go?
I'd like to see. You know what? I said this a couple of weeks ago. They're selling these beautiful Gears of War 3 Xbox 360s. Mm-hmm. That are red and have nice patterns on them and a larger hard drive. And I'm thinking, do I want to buy a last-gen console? And here's the thing. A lot of people do. I'm just going to say this right now. A lot of people are buying last-gen consoles. And here's another news item, which I did not include because it was just announced an hour ago. And you're going to love this. They announced that they're finally going to release Duke Nukem 3D for the Sega Genesis.
What?
They're going to release Duke Nukem 3D for the Sega Genesis. Now, it's not for the first time, technically. It was released in Brazil for the Brazilian Genesis.
But on a ROM?
Yes. They're going to sell it in a regular Genesis box with a regular manual and a regular ROM cartridge.
Okay.
But the thing is that, you know, gee, who is selling Genesis? Oh, right! GameStop is selling Genesis.
Genesis. It's just Genesis.
Yeah, plural of Genesis. Anyways, so they're selling Segas, right? And, you know, it's kind of, you know, 20 years later, they're going to release the Sega Genesis version of Duke Nukem 3D.
Good luck with that. We're all counting on you.
It's kind of kinky. Especially if you can buy a Sega Genesis for like $20. So you can buy I don't know how much the cart is going to cost, actually. Carts cost money. It might be that Duke Nukem 3D was going to cost more than the Sega Genesis itself.
Yeah, I don't see this working very well.
You know what? Trust me, there's a market for this. I mean, for one thing, they're making homebrew Genesis games all the time. So, in carts. Not just ROMs, but in carts. And
I'd rather have it digitally, but yeah, you're right. Somebody will buy it.
You know, I remember they had a Kickstarter for the Atari 2600 version of Space Star Castle. And, you know, it made it. And it was kind of neat that you got an all-new Atari 2600 cart that with an all-new game. And one of the fun things about that Kickstarter was they followed all the rules. They did not cheat. They did not add extra memory. They did it so that they made Star Castle, I think. They made Star Castle with 4K.
That's really impressive.
And the thing is, a little history here. The fact is that the original guy who tried to make Star Castle for the 2600 couldn't do it, and he failed. So what he did was he made a different game out of it, and we know that game as Yar's Revenge. So Yar's Revenge came out of trying to make Star Castle. And the guy who actually did the, did some of the promotion for Yar's Revenge, finished up Star Castle and released it as a cart. So that came full circle.
Nice.
So yeah, I mean, and people are making, like, I don't know if you know this story about the Jaguar. Now, if you know anything about the Jaguar, it's an Atari console, which boasted 64-bit processor, right? Far ahead of everything else. The problem was that no one knew how to program for it. So what they did was they developed games for the 16-bit controller that the Jaguar came with. So you had 16-bit games on a machine that could have done better. And people wondered, why would we buy the Jaguar when it looks like everything else? Which is why, folks, when you release a console, you better send out that dev kit.
Yep.
Send out that dev kit. So, can you imagine what would have happened had they been able to do 64-bit games on the Jaguar at the time? I mean, that was the entire thing about Sega does what Nintendo don't, you know?
Yeah, that was for all of, like, 5 seconds until Nintendo did.
Well, the thing is that Nintendo did it with a machine that wasn't as powerful, but had better games. So, you know.
I don't know.
They had better games. They just didn't, you know.
Maybe they just did it more efficiently then. I don't know. The games were better.
They were cheaper, too. See, that's the other thing.
That was my childhood, the SNES, man. That was my childhood.
I played a few games in the SNES. I played Star Fox, and I played Super Mario, was it World? The one that,
yeah, Super Mario World. Came with it.
I couldn't get very far with it, but, you know. I played Star Fox. That was okay. Those are the only two games I ever played.
A whole bunch of good games.
Because I never played the SNES, because I was a PC gamer by that time, in 1992.
I was doing both. You play both.
Yeah, no, I was strictly a PC gamer by that time. And I was mourning the loss of the Commodore Amiga. You know, by that time, the Commodore Amiga had been phased out. And I was a heavy-duty Commodore guy, Commodore 64, Commodore Amiga. And I was, like, bitter tears. And I couldn't love again any console for a long time. It was a breakup that was bad. It was, you didn't want to see it. I didn't get another console until what happened was that this was at a time when the Dreamcast was discontinued, and I bought a $50 Dreamcast, and that got me back on the kick. And then I got an Xbox for $600. But that's because it was one of those GameStop bundles, three games, an extra controller, and yeah, when they ripped you off like that, yes, I know. But on the other hand, you know, it did give me a little library to start with. You know, and we're going way off, but I don't care. We're going way off. I don't care. It also was the first time I ever played Tony Hawk. They released it with Tony Hawk 2, I think it was 2X. So that got me on the kick for Tony Hawk for a long while. And one of the news we didn't do because it was last week's news, but the Tony Hawk 5 was an absolute disaster. It was completely buggy, and from what I understand from other people was that the reason why it's such a piece of crap is that they rushed out a game just so that they can hold on to the Tony Hawk license for another year.
Yeah, there was somebody who'd, there was a similar incident where they released a pilot to the Wheel of Time just so they could hold on to the movie license for Wheel of Time. And it was a craptastic pilot, the worst kind of pilot you would ever want to see. It had Tommy Zane. No, Billy Zane.
Billy Zane. Was he still bald? Because after he did Demon Knight, he went with a bald look for a long while.
He had his hair. He had hair for this pilot, and it was just terrible.
Here's the thing, is that that's also how we got the unreleased Fantastic Four film by Roger Corman. Because they made it so that they could hold on to the license.
Yeah, I don't...
And the same deal with Captain America movie, too. With Reb Brown. Reb Brown.
That just seems really crappy. I mean, I think...
Don't knock it, because so far that Roger Corman Fantastic Four film is the best film that's come out. It's true.
I don't know if that's saying much.
No, but at least, you know, and Doctor Doom at least looked like Doctor Doom.
I think I'd rather watch The Incredibles.
Yeah. Anyways, speaking of Nintendo, actually, we actually very clumsily did a nice little segue. So, report. Nintendo's next platform, the NX, combines console and handheld in some way. Nintendo's new gaming platform will encompass a console and a handheld, according to a report in today's Wall Street Journal. According to the paper, the exact shape of the NX hardware isn't clear. People familiar with the development plan said that Nintendo will likely include both a console and at least one mobile unit that could be used in conjunction with a console or be taken on the road for separate use. They also said Nintendo would aim to put industry leader... They also said that Nintendo would aim to put industry-leading chips in the NX devices. After criticism that the Wii U's capabilities didn't match those of the competitors, remember the Wii was just two GameCubes strapped together, and the Wii U was two Wiis strapped together. And by the way, that's not an exaggeration or insult. That's actually true, but not exactly duct taped together. But you know what I mean. They're both. It's just two Wiis on the motherboard. The reporter who broke the story for the journal later said in Twitter that the NX platform is, quote, likely to have more than two devices. That further emphasized the idea that the NX could be a family of machines that work together rather than a single unified device. The journal's report also states that Nintendo has begun distributing a, quote, unquote, software development kit, an SDK. Like I said, gotta get those SDK, those software development kits out because, you know, unless you want the same thing to happen to it that happened to the Jaguar. By the way, a little bit of a diversion there. That's why a lot of the Wiimote games that weren't by Nintendo sucked. Because Nintendo no like third-party developers for a long time. They would not let people develop for the Nintendo without going through hoops, and they certainly didn't let them develop games before their consoles were released. Them giving SDKs to developers is a fairly recent idea that started with the Wii U. You can comment if you want.
Yeah, I've been thinking, like, what changes will happen now that we have a new president in there. Of Nintendo.
That's true.
And so, like, this whole thing is just, like, one of those things that's going to change now. But I remember, if there's two devices, it sounds like they're doing the whole Wii U again with the handheld screen thing. But maybe they'll do something else. Hopefully, I would like something different. That would be nice.
Well, you know that Nintendo's obsessed with mobile, and by mobile I mean iPhones and Android. You know, and they seem to think that's the. So I'm wondering if they're going to have some sort of mobile capability with it. You know, here's the thing: is that you can make a handheld for a couple of bucks now. Right, it's not that big a deal. I mean, you can make a Game Boy Advance for $5, you know. So it wouldn't be too hard to create a separate handheld, you know, for if you wanted to make a handheld a part of it. So they sort of like they say, hey, not only could our controller, but it'll also play DS games as well, you know, that sort of thing, and also be your controller. Let me ask you a question: do you think that the tablet controller has really caught on, if it's something Nintendo likes? Hello? Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
I asked a question. Do you think the tablet controller that's on the Wii U is something Nintendo likes or people like? I know Paul loves it.
I thought it was neat. I mean, it could be maybe made better, I guess, to be a little less awkward, because I don't think people want to look from the screen and up constantly. But then again, I'm sitting here just wanting to use that for, like, Fallout 4, the Pip-Boy app.
The Pip-Boy, yes.
On my little phone and have it on the side so I don't have to bring it up within game.
I'm wondering, is the Pip-Boy going to include a thing, or do you have to insert a cell phone in it? Is it going to come with its own device, or is it just, or you have to put your own cell phone in it?
I'm talking about the actual Pip-Boy app.
Oh, but I'm talking about the thing that's going
to
be coming with the collector's edition.
You would have to put your own phone in it, yes.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Yeah, in fact, it comes with custom foam to adapt to various phones, so like
right.
A whole bunch of different ones. And yeah. So, yeah, like if you have an Android or an iPhone, it'll fit. A lot of them. Anything smaller than iPhone 6, iPhone 6 and down, you can't put, like, your iPad in there or something like that. But
yeah, I mean, what I intend to do is just use the iPad with Fallout 4, you know, because my iPad has, I have a base, right, that allows it to stand up in a triangular way. So, you know, that'll be the most comfortable for me, just having it sitting there on the table and, you know, occasionally glancing at it.
So a handheld screen, I think, can work if you, like, maybe take, I don't know, just work on maybe having it so it's not so awkward to look between the two things, you know, or maybe have it more, like, intuitive, like, more, you know, where it is, more hand-eye coordinated, you know, you have, like, that memory of where things are on the screen so you don't have to look down as much or as focused. Because I think that's the problem, I think, is some of these games kind of clumsy with the usage of it. And you're right, it's like if you're not allowing third party people to come and develop, you're really limiting a whole bunch of growth that you can have.
Here's the thing though, at the time that Nintendo was doing it for a long while, it actually made sense, especially since they had no competitors for a long while too. And even when they did have competitors, you know, people believed that Nintendo Seal of Quality bullshit. All that Nintendo Seal of Quality meant was that they paid the license for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the reason I'm asking is that I'm just wondering if they're going to go with the same screen controller, except have it be a mobile. You know, more like the Nvidia Shield or something like that. And if they do it, if it's going to be Wi-Fi, one of the things that irritated me the most about the Nintendo GBA and the Nintendo DS was the hoops you had to go through just to get wireless on them, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm just wondering, you know, if that's the case, maybe you'll have a Wi-Fi handheld console, you know, that also doubles as a controller for the NX, you know? And if that's the case, if it's going to have like flash memory on it so that you can have a game.
It would be a cool way to play some of those older games. And
yeah,
like you just said, like we
have a little flash memory on it. Yeah.
You download like an old Final Fantasy or an old Nintendo game and just,
or Tetris or Dr. Mario or stuff like that.
Yeah. And then go and play
I'm pretty sure you can play Zelda, yes. And that's another game. I think it's like I think it's like how much like 50 kilobytes?
Oh yeah!
I think most of the memory in The Legend of Zelda was the song. By the way, here's the thing: is I sucked at that game. I never got past, I think, the fourth dungeon, so I don't remember really that well the dungeon music. I only remember the Overland.
I'm gonna just channel Phil and I mean Paul.
Well, I just sucked at it.
I know somebody named Phil, and I got them mixed up.
You mean Phil? Phil?
Paul would definitely troll you over your lack
of skills.
He already knows.
He already knows that I only played the one Zelda, the very first one,
just
the gold
one.
Yeah, well, I wasn't a console gamer. Okay.
Wow. Okay, that's okay.
I played one of them. See, there's a lot of people who played none of them. You know what I really wanted to play, but I didn't. I got excited about it because I was a huge Commodore 64 fan. I remember opening a comic and seeing that they were doing Ultima on the NES. I was like, whoa, they're doing Ultima
on the Nintendo. I think it was
Ultima 3 was called Ultima. Yeah. Ultima 2 was Ultima 4, and that's all I remember. Or no, Ultima with a
Why? Why did you do that to us?
No, I think it was I think it was Ultima and some colon thing, not a number. Ultima, but the first Ultima was Ultima 3, you know. Let me look at that up as well. Ultima 4. What was it on the NES? I think it was called... Oh, yeah, it was just Ultima Quest of the Avatar. They just borrowed the same subtitle, so I'm pretty sure it was Ultima the False Prophet on the NES. Anyway.
Yeah.
But the thing is that it was an improved graphics over, you know, obviously over the C64 version. It was nice, big, and round, and friendlier. I would have liked to have... And I think... And here's the thing about Ultima on the NES. I think everything that was in Ultima in the NES, the Japanese got for JRPGs after that. I think Ultima on the NES was the source of a lot of Japanese JRPG tropes.
Like what?
Oh, like the hit points, you know, and the magic way, the way they do magic, you know, and I think in Ultima, you could back me up on this if I'm wrong. You could tell me if I'm wrong, but didn't your entire party walk with you, not just the one single guy?
Yeah, your party would walk with you, but
I'm just saying the way it looked, it just looks. Looking back on it, it looks like a JRPG game, even though it's not much different than Ultima 3.
I think there are some people that would slap you and say, "How dare you!" But
no, this is 1983. I mean, you know,
I think
NES sentiment. Well, not 1983, but 1985 or 1986 actually. I don't know when it came out.
Spoony one would want to destroy you for your powers.
Spoony, I don't watch Spoony. I don't watch Spoony. Sorry, I watch Linkara.
Sorry.
I play Linkara. I watch Linkara. I used to watch The Nostalgia Critic. I don't much anymore.
Got tired of his yelling?
No. The thing is that he's starting to do movies I've heard of, and I would just sniff and say, "You don't know what you're talking about." So, yeah, the NES version of Ultima 3 came out in 87.
Ah, okay.
So, yeah, I mean, it had modified graphics and a new soundtrack. Considerable alterations to gameplay. Yeah, they made it into a JRPG. Significantly expanded dialogue. So, yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's just that I was shocked to see... And here's the thing. I saw a lot of NES RPGs, and they didn't look like... They didn't look like what we call JRPGs now.
I think the point is that I think it's time for Nintendo to allow third-party people to develop and to come in and to be more open to new...
Well, they are. They just said they sent out SDKs to other people. So, what I think it's time for is another Ultima game, a real one. Not the one that MMO Richard Garriott is releasing through Kickstarter. I actually have it. And I played a little bit through. I was confused. I'm going to wait until it's actually released before I play it.
Very good idea.
EA owns the Ultima license. Oh, and you know what? I don't know if you read the article, but I wrote an article about Ultima 10, which was going to be the MMO that replaced Ultima Online. And I'm going to tell you something. This came before World of Warcraft, and it was kicking World of Warcraft's ass. I mean, in terms of the way it looked, the way it played, you know, and a few things that were in it later showed up in Tabula Rasa, but it was a sci-fi game. So, yeah, I mean, you have to, if you're an Ultima fan, I'll have to show you the article on Ultima 10, and then you can empty a 40 in mourning the loss of this game, because everybody who saw it at E3, they were shocked, and they were really eager for this. But you know what happened? EA didn't want to kill Ultima Online. They wanted to keep living, even though it was 10 years old. And they said, no, we're too scared. We don't want to harm the subscription of Ultima Online. Like, they're going to have both at the same time. And it was really the stupidest reasons. They just got scared and didn't want to close. And what they did instead was expand Ultima Online a little bit.
So EA was being EA.
They're being conservative. They're being ultra conservative.
All over everything.
Yeah, but you know what? It's not too late. Let's get an Ultima 10, a real one. It's time. I mean, now you can do it like the Elder Scrolls.
I think your comments are funny when reflecting on one of the further story items down the line.
Well, anyways, the next news item, I guess I'll take this as well. So, remaining Batman Arkham Knight Season Pass content revealed. Now, this comes to us from Eurogamer. Ah, Eurogamer. Rocksteady has revealed all the remaining Batman Arkham Knight Season Pass content. And there's quite a lot, comprising Batman skins, alternative Batmobiles, AR challenges, two short story editions, and a pack of most wanted challenges. Oh, and there's some free stuff, mostly to do with the AR challenges, an optional hard difficulty, and the character selectability. The blue walls around the AR challenges are being, quote-unquote, slightly reduced, too. In other words, yeah, those ARs, when you play the game, they're too difficult to do, because you couldn't, you know, you couldn't do the prerequisites for them. The season pass Batman skins include the one from Dark Knight, and then Ben Affleck's from the new Superman versus Batman film coming next year. You know, do you bleed? That is going to be a disaster. By the way, you know, they're calling it, it may be called Superman versus Batman, but it's actually Man of Steel 2. I could do an entire podcast and how much I want to hire an assassin to kill Dan Didio. They have screwed up the DC Universe so badly. Let's just put it this way. Guys, normally this stuff is in Elseworlds books. You don't make the main DC Universe Elseworlds. Anyways, they're also old Robin and Catwoman costumes and Batmobiles. The new Arkham episodes, vignettes dealing what happened to characters after Arkham Knight, including Catwoman infiltrating Riddler's HQ and Robin getting used to life without someone around. Although, if you saw the special ending, do you think it's spoilers time? Yeah, spoilers. You know, this is not spoilers because I don't care. It's a couple of months later, and besides which, the ending is completely and utterly stupid. If you complete all the challenges, what happens is after Wayne Manor blows up, you have a robbery that's similar to the two rich people and the kid, and they're being robbed, right? So this figure appears, the smoky figure appears atop the building, and then they say they're not scared because Batman's dead, and it doesn't say it just attacks, and it looks like a combination of Batman Beyond and the smoke monster from Lost. So that's basically what happens. The Most Wanted expansion includes Batteries Killer Clock, Mr. Freeze, Mad Hatter, and Ra's al Ghul, who, by the way, all appeared already in Batman... Killer Croc appeared in Batman Arkham Asylum, of course. Mad Hatter, Ra's al Ghul, and Mr. Freeze also appeared in the first one, too. Mad Hatter and Ra's al Ghul appeared in the second one, Batman Arkham City. Anyway, the PC version of the game, by the way, will go back on sale at the end of this month after being a complete disaster at initial launch. Yeah, that thing did not work at all. I'm glad I got the Xbox One version instead of PC version. And normally I get the PC version, but now, since they were no longer Xbox Live, in which you can get achievements for it, I said, nah, not bothering. I don't care about Steam achievements. So yeah, I'd like to hear your response before I unload.
Well, Steam achievements have helped me, I think, in certain games anyways.
Well, I mean, Steam achievements sometimes tell you what you can do. You know, it's like, oh, I didn't know I could do that.
Yeah, sometimes, but then a lot of times these things will be hidden or they're challenges. Like, you know, in Civ, there'll be, conquer an Egyptian city with a temple in it, conquer a city with the Petra in it with a land ship, you know, stuff like that, which would, you know, just, you know, get you to play the game in a different way or just play with a different leader or something.
But I'm going to say something that's going to make you annoyed at me, or maybe not. I still haven't played Sid Meier's Beyond Earth, okay. So I don't know how good the expansion is.
Yeah, I haven't played the expansion at all right now, so it's fine.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm going to wait for that to go on sale.
Oh, really? Yeah. You know, actually, now that I think, maybe I should just wait until they do the bundle of the main game plus the expansion.
Yeah, they'll do something like that eventually.
Yeah. So, yeah. My reaction to this is I don't care. Because a lot of the stuff that was in the main game, like the Predator challenges and the bet and the fighting challenges. You know, those are part of the main game. I don't care if they're free. You didn't give it to me on launch on the day, so I don't care. I've moved on. They could give all this DLC away for free. I don't care. And I was underwhelmed by the Harley Quinn and Red Hood DLC anyway. Why am I going to think that any of the DLC they did give here, and the ending was completely stupid? I mean, you're fighting against Deathstroke. You're fighting against Deathstroke. I expect to have a major melee battle with the greatest fighter, pure fighter, in the DC universe in Deathstroke, with his swords and his military experience. But how do you defeat him? You blow him up in a tank. And when he comes out, he's so tired, he's not even a challenge. At least he was something special in Batman Arkham Origins, in which that was it was a bunch of quick time events, but at least it was exciting. You know, here, I don't care. He's in a tank. I don't care. You know? And by the way, I was not really pleased at Jason Todd being the Arkham Knight. And that's not a spoiler either, because anybody with even a drop of knowledge of the Batman universe, once he starts remembering, oh, remember how Jason Todd was killed? I said, okay, thank you. You just told me he's the Arkham Knight. There's no reason to bring up Jason Todd in any way unless he's going to be in the game, and he hasn't appeared, so he must be the Arkham Knight. And when I learned that, I was like, oh. Because you know what I was hoping? I was hoping that the Arkham Knight would be a new character. And Rocksteady flat out lied. They said, he was going to be a new character. He was going to be... No, he's not a new character. You know, I would have been more impressed with some crappy character like Prometheus. You know, but Jason Todd? You know?
I don't know if that is.
Well, okay, so you've heard... A Death of the Family. Jason Todd is the second Robin, A Death in the Family. People phoned in to vote whether he would live or die. They voted for him to die, so he died. And it was a close vote, but they wanted him to die. And for a long time, there were only three people who would not be resurrected, and that would be Jason Todd, Bucky, who is Captain America's sidekick, and Barry Allen, who is the Flash, who killed himself in Crisis of Infinite Earths. And of course, 20 years later, they're all alive again. You should try.
This is why I can't get into comics. There's no like finality. There's no, oh my god, this is when the death of this character happens, and it stays that way. They just keep bringing them back. And
the thing is that often they just reboot everything. So
yeah.
But here's the thing about that is that if you ever want to learn about Jason Todd, and you don't need any previous Batman experience for this, just watch Batman Under the Red Hood. It is a really gritty thing, and it actually has John DiMaggio playing the Joker. For those of you who don't know who John DiMaggio is, he's the guy who plays Bender on Futurama, among other characters. I mean, he also is Marcus Fenix in Gears of War, but yeah, just picture a very nasty Bender in that. So yeah, I am so over. Here's the thing, and you don't have to, you know, this you don't have to know anything about Batman for. I mean, it was very clear from the start that the DLC that was for Batman Arkham Knight was not natural DLC. There's two types of DLC. There's DLC that's made after the game's produced to give people something extra, you know? And then there's DLC because they chopped up the main game and decided to offer it piecemeal.
Yeah,
to entice people in buying the season pass. And that's what this was. Because they did not include the two things that I play the most after I play the main series. And that is the Predator challenges and the fighting challenges. You know? Because it's fun. And that's another thing, by the way. Did you play the Batman games? It sounds like you didn't.
No, I didn't.
Okay.
The SNES ones I did.
That doesn't count.
It does.
No. Okay, the Rocksteady developed Batman. The Rocksteady developed Batman games. So the thing is that the Predator challenges were the best thing to me about the first two games, because what you're doing is that it's stealth gameplay at its best. You're hiding from the shadows. You're taking out mooks one by one and try to do it silently. And then, you know, the mooks would come, oh no, oh crap, he's taking us out one, and they'd get more and more panicked In the first game, the last one would sometimes fire at random every time he heard a noise. He was that scared. You know, it was hilarious. And it was just so it was so evil and great at the same time, just to play with these guys' heads. You know, sometimes you'd string them upside down by a bat cord, you know. And when his friends got near, you would throw a batarang and cut the bat cord so he dropped on top of them. So they have their unconscious guy dropping on them all of a sudden without their knowledge. Like, holy cow, what is going on? And it was just great to see him panic more and more. Now, they don't make these, they don't have these set pieces like that in the latter games. They just don't, you know. I mean, if you want, get Batman Arkham Asylum, which is the most linear of them. And, you know, you could probably get it for $2. You know, just give yourself a nice Xbox joystick, you know, Xbox 360 controller, and just plug it in and just go to town. It's really, really fun, the first one.
And, that's good, at least.
Yeah. The others, I don't play over again because here's the, like I said, the more open world you make something, the less replayable it is. You know, when you have something that's more or less linear, I mean, Batman Arkham Asylum wasn't completely linear, but the storyline was, and Arkham Asylum was small enough.
I'd have to disagree. I played, like, L.A. Noire, and I did everything.
Yeah, L.A. Noire is not linear, is not open world at all. It pretends it being open world.
Yeah, it's not. It's
but
not
you never world. Deviate. Yeah, you never deviate from the path.
You do. There's set missions. They're not random. They just randomly pop up.
Yeah.
And you do them, and then they're done, and they never come back.
But it's like, an adventure game. It's not really an open world game.
Had random crimes that you could stop. But
But here's the thing: is that all the set all the action pieces, you could skip them and not lose anything. You could just say not interested.
Yep, there's a skip button if you were, like, having too difficult to find.
Well, it isn't it. It's just that maybe you just didn't care. And, the action in it wasn't that great, you know. The entire game was
the first
interrogation.
Time. At least do it once. And then, if you kept dying... Then
The interrogation was the entire game.
I didn't see the skip until I died a couple times, and then they offered me the skip, but I wouldn't take the skip.
Yeah. And, you know, people don't understand from L.A. Noire is that about 90% of the game is the backstory.
Yep.
And Kelso is actually the hero of the game. And you know how his thing appears? He's an insurance investigator, and a femme fatale comes walking into his office to help him, asking him to help her get off her boyfriend. That's how every single film noir starts.
Yep.
And people don't understand that. I forgot his name already.
Yeah,
but the character. What?
Yeah, that wasn't the main character. He's basically the child.
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to remember his name though. Anyway, he's a piece of crap. He's an asshole. He's and people are wondering why are you making me do all this stuff, cheat on his wife and all this? Because he's a scumbag, and they tell you so in the very last scene. You know, after everything's happened, when they're talking about how, you know, on the boat that they don't need him anymore, and it's like, you know, people like that just drag you down. You know, at least he heroically sacrificed himself. Yeah, I know that's another spoiler. I don't care. That game is how old now? Oh, anyways.
I don't know. I don't remember. But yeah, basically the point was that it was a linear game, and once I completed all the stuff, I was done. There was no point in replaying. The only things left to do
DLC.
Was to drive around.
Well, there was the DLC as well. I'm going to replay it because I got all the DLC for free, right? So at some point, I'm just going to replay that. I'm going to play that DLC, just, you know, the entire game with the DLC included, so I get the entire story. And I'm going to cheat I'm just going to have all the correct responses right there in front of me, you know, so I don't care that I'm cheating. I don't care.
That's another thing that kind of bothered me was that when you went through all of that and convicted all these people...
Well, sometimes you get convicted of the wrong person.
Wrong. It was none of these people. It was this crazy guy over here.
Well, you had to... No, the thing is that you had to do all the you had to do all the detective work and put it together the right way. Now I'm thinking about the gamer poop for L.A. Noire. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. And, you know, and like I said, Batman Arkham Knight, go to hell. Next time, release a full game.
Speaking of that, there's memes where they show a picture of the Mona Lisa and two subsequent paintings that Leonardo da Vinci did, and then the DLC, the way it is now, they chop up Mona Lisa and have DLC bits and little store exclusives wherever you bought it, and it's just it was funny.
They did have a little thing, but yeah, I see the Mona Lisa as a next gen video game.
Yeah. So this next story, EA remakes happen when you're out of ideas. From Destructoid. Electronic Arts isn't keen on re-releasing games in its back catalog on new platforms. Speaking with IGN, EA Chief Operating Officer Pete Moore said the practice of remaking older titles feels like pushing stuff out because you've run out of ideas. I don't know where we find the time to do remakes, Moore added. We're a company that just likes to push forward, while Moore recognizes the appeal of remakes, saying for a lot of companies, remakes are a way of to drive revenue. He maintains, we don't do that here at EA. I don't think that's ever been in our culture.
No, just sequels and reboots.
And crap games. And
oh, I see. Okay, so we have The Sims 3. We have a reboot of SimCity. That's just two right off the top of my bat. We had Guitar Hero after Guitar Hero. That was Activision. It was Rock Band.
SimCity bombed very badly.
Well, it didn't bomb. It just didn't get the sales it thought it would. And then City Skylines came out and kicked it in the ass.
Because it's a better city building game.
Well, the thing is that they wanted SimCity to be a multiplayer game, and it can work. I mean, there was a SimCity 2000 Network Edition.
If they designed it better. But I mean, from what I can tell,
they designed it pay for DLC. Anyway, yeah, so that's a bunch of horseshit. And the thing is that there's no difference between, say, doing a modern remake of System Shock, the first one, and doing another Medal of Honor game. You know, there's no difference. And, you know, Peter Moore said some batshit crazy stuff in the past, so. I mean, but to say that they won't do. Here's the thing. I would rather have a remake than I would a reboot or a sequel at this point. I would love to see some of the old games remade, redone completely, but with the same plot for new machines. Like I said, System Shock is a perfect example. If you try to play System Shock off GOG, God, it is such a chore. Because when it was released, they didn't have something called Mouse Look. They added it for the game, but it's still clunky, you know? But I've grown accustomed to Mouse Look when I'm playing a PC game.
What do you mean? What is Mouse Look?
You look around with your mouse.
Oh, okay.
Or, if you want, looking around with the right thumbstick.
Oh, okay, yeah, that can be awkward.
You know, you haven't used a keyboard, WASD, to look up left, right, and no. No, I use that to move when I'm playing a shooter. You know, Microsoft struck big with remaking not the sequel, but remaking Perfect Dark Zero. That was nothing. But you know, Perfect Dark, they remade the original NES game. They remade Banjo-Kazooie and Banjo-Tooie. So yeah, I mean, you know, there's nothing wrong with remaking a game. Especially if it's a really old game and it doesn't really work anymore. Or if it looks like crap because the tech wasn't there. I mean, isn't there a game that you'd like to see remade?
Yeah.
I mean, and here's the thing. The game has to be from before 1990.
Sure, there's some games, yeah. Like old 80s games. Like, I would love to see a new Warlords. That would be awesome.
Are you talking about the D&D Warlords? You know, that one in which is a castle-building game? Oh, no, I'm thinking Stronghold. D&D Stronghold. That would be a great game, too, by the way.
That, too. I'm thinking of the Atari game where you're
four-player. Yes, I know. There's four-player breakout.
Yeah. Well, that was awesome.
They did do it on the Xbox 360. It was a revamped version. Actually, you can buy it on PC, too. You know what game I would really love to see an upgrade of and not a sequel or a reboot? Sid Meier's Railroad Tycoon. With great graphics and exactly the way it was played. Not Sid Meier's Railroads and not the two sequels that came after. No, I'm talking about Railroad Tycoon, in which you have the entire huge map, you know, and
Windows 98?
That game, I think it was 88, yes. I played it hours and hours and hours on end in college.
Yeah.
I brought my Amiga with me because I had the C64 version first, and then I got the Amiga version, and then later on I got the PC version, which was older by then.
Tower?
What? Sim Tower was okay. I mean, I could never get past the three-star building. It wasn't my thing. And besides which, I think it had sort of like a sort of sequel with Tiny Tower. Well, it's not quite the same, I know, but... but yeah, I mean, there's tons of stuff. I mean, they did try to do a remake of Mule, endlessly. But it has to have some complexities. See, that's the issue.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's just so much... I mean, how about this? How about a remake of the first Civilization? Because I still know that people enjoy the first Civilization, especially with all the... without the exploits. Like, when you looked at the map, those, like, cities and everything was a city or a road. You know, that was insane. And then people were making these 89 million population cities. You know, ridiculous things like that. You know, just cut out some of the BS. And they did have CivNet.
Yeah, he was the one showing you the text. Every time you learned a new text, he would stand in front of it, pointing at it.
No, there was not CivNet. Civilization Network Edition, or it was Civ 2 Network Edition. Anyway, we still have multiplayer and Civ, but I'm just saying, you know. But like I said, Railroad Tycoon would be perfect, and just the graphic upgrade. Keep the mechanics. Keep all the mechanics. They were fine. There was nothing wrong with the original Railroad Tycoon. Nothing. But they had to tinker it and make it more exciting. And they removed, like, and I don't know. And then Sid Meier came with Sid Meier's Railroads. And it was also a mess. You know, I think I'm maybe the only person on Earth who did not like Transport Tycoon.
Possibly.
Yeah. You know what's coming out, which I'm really excited about? And I did not know it was coming out very soon. It's coming out faster than I thought it would. I didn't even know it existed. But you know that Roller Coaster Tycoon World is coming out soon.
Awesome. On GOG or what?
I don't know. It's on digital distribution. But, you know, here's the thing. What's it called? Now the tracks are what's the word I'm looking for? Are deformable so that you can do any sort of curve that you want to fit the track to fit the thing, you know. So you don't have to worry about this curve isn't good. I'm not going to be able to complete the circuit because the curve isn't there. You only have four types of turns and none of them work.
That's unfortunate.
No, I mean that's in the old game, but in this game now you can just stretch the track and move it, you know, and just have any sort of degree angle you want on it, and it looks great. And it's going to have the ride-your-own roller coaster part of Roller Coaster Tycoon 3, which is the only reason to buy that game. I mean, the game was really bad, but you could sit in the roller coaster. Actually, in any of the rides. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to Roller Coaster Tycoon. Roller Coaster Tycoon World. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, anyways, EA is full of shit when they say remakes happen when you're out of ideas, because they're already out of ideas.
Oh, yeah. Because they keep buying other people's...
I'm not talking about EA in particular. I just mean in general, you know. It's very hard, you know. There's a reason why things are tried and true, and you just make alterations to them, right? You're not going to reinvent the wheel. And if you do, you know, make it... You learn... Here's the thing. AAA titles, you don't remake the world. You just make something with different stuff, right? It's the job of the indie developers to discover new things, really new things, right? I mean, look what DayZ did, right? I mean, DayZ, hey, open world, do what you want, zombie apocalypse, and the people over there, the other players, they might help you or they may just shoot you in the head and take your stuff. You know, and it gave rise to Rust and H1Z1 and all these other open world zombie games, and then you have... You know, more zombie games that are, you know, they're self-contained, like the one on the Xbox, the one that frustrated me so much.
Right. So over zombies.
Oh, okay, make them robots. I mean, sir, what's it called? Sir, You Are Being Hunted is the same type of game except with robots. But here's the kick about them. They are upper-crust, posh aristocratic British robots. So, yeah. And you're basically the fox for their little fox hunt, you know. Sir, I'm over here. I need to shoot your head. Please stand still. Thank you.
Yeah, I can see that.
Fawlty Towers robots attacking you. I have it. I played an early build, and I decided I was just going to wait until it was until, you know, it was a release build, because I did back it. So yeah. Anyways, like I said, you know, it's EA. You can do the remakes. Just do the remakes we want. I mean, you're still going to make money. You know, and I think EA owns the copyright, owns the rights to EA owns the rights to Railroad Tycoon as well. I think they own all the rights. You know what I'd really love to see a remake of? Auto Duel. Oh, God. Auto Duel. It's based on the Car Wars license, and it's an open. It was a sort of open world. It was basically the Northeast, and all you did was take jobs and all that stuff. In all my years of playing, I never grabbed onto the main story thread. It was that open. I'm pretty sure there was a story in there somewhere. But I didn't care because it gave you so many options. That's the game right there, Auto Duel. You've never heard of Auto Duel, have you?
Nope.
Yeah, it's a top-down... you know Car Wars, right? Steve Jackson,
nope.
RPG... No? Nope. Okay, I'll give you the motto that's on the box. The right of way goes to the biggest guns.
That sounds like something that would be in heavy metal.
There was sort of a spiritual sequel with Interstate 79. It's basically cars with guns strapped onto them in the future.
Right. Like in Rogue Blaster or Twisted Metal.
You know, the thing about it is that even in its primitive state, it was by Origin. So it was among the Ultimas and the other Origin games. It was a top-down car combat game, and it was addictive as hell. And it's still addictive. I can get by the...
car combat is really fun. It's enjoyable. I just haven't played those two.
But here's the thing. Auto Duel did it perfectly. Even back then, it was the most open-world game of sorts. And, you know, it was way, way, way ahead of its time. You know, I'm going to waste too much money obsessing over Auto Duel. Here's the thing. If you can get past the graphics and you go around to modding your car, like putting in machine guns or a flamethrower in back or oil slicks or you know, and all that stuff. Yeah, I got to find a developer and say, hey, listen, let's start a Kickstarter for Auto Duel and get EA on board with it. Actually, that's not the problem. Steve Jackson is notoriously grinchy. Yeah, so we'd have to call it something else. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item. Bandai Namco. And I always thought it was Namco Bandai. Maybe if the Japanese version is Bandai Namco. Pulls the plug on Rise of Incarnates, and this comes from some Games Industry Biz. Namco Bandai is continuing to trim its free-to-play slate, today announcing it will be shuttering Rise of Incarnates later this year. The 2v2 arena combat game launched in Steam Early Access in February with a general release on July 1st. Now, when I say February and July 1st, I mean 2015. It will no longer be playable after December 15th. Namco Bandai has already halted sales and in-game currency and made all the characters free to play. Last month, Bandai Namco, I keep wanting to say Namco Bandai, damn it, announced the closure of another of its free-to-play games, the PlayStation 3 exclusive Soul Calibur Lost Swords. That game will have lasted slightly longer than Rise of Incarnates, launching in early 2014 and now scheduled to end service on November 30th. Bandai Namco hasn't fled the free-to-play market entirely. Its free-to-play slate still includes Tekken Revolution and Ace Combat Infinity for PS3, as well as the PC betas for Battleline, Steel Warfare, and Supernova. So here's the thing. You just enjoyed the Steam Early Access, and then it gets released, and then 3 months later, Namco Bandai says, nope, sorry, that's it, game over, the game's over, you can't play anymore, no matter how much you liked it. That 3 months for a free-to-play game, you know, that is a blink of an eye.
And that means future generations won't be able to play it, it'll be gone?
Nope, it'll be like it never existed. Yeah, it's... 3 months? Can you imagine an MMO lasting 3 months? Either it was really, really terrible or... No, even really, really terrible MMOs last much longer than that. The Matrix Online lasted for several years. You know? So, yeah, I don't think it was because it was a bad game. Although, you know, 2-on-2 fighting game, it's kind of a hard sell. I mean, I and it's a 3D game. And maybe it's a fighting game, 2-on-2. I mean, people do that all the time, but still, you know, it's just, it's sad. I mean, you know, every game has its fan, no matter how much bad it is. So I feel sad for the person. They're only going to be able to play until the 30th of November, and even then, they can't really boost their character or do anything. You know, there's no point.
Stay away from free-to-play games, I guess.
But they're free, yeah. So,
yeah.
You know, actually, Microsoft made Project Spark free. What's it called? Free-to-play. They didn't cancel, but they made it free-to-play. And what they did, which is really nice, is that anybody who bought stuff after July 31st got refunds for the stuff they bought that is now free. So, you know, they said, you know, it's kind of not fair for you to have bought this stuff, and then we just say, oh, by the way, everything's free now.
Yeah.
By the way, the sad part of that is that the Conquer stuff that they were working on is canceled.
Oh.
And they're leaving it to the fans. They're leaving everything to the fans. Say, guess what? You know what? This is now open source. Do whatever the hell you want with it. Which actually, you know, isn't that bad. I mean, you know, because people are making incredible stuff with it under the Microsoft umbrella. But if they're open sourcing it now, I can't imagine what they're going to be making. And I think Microsoft knows that too, which is why they didn't just stop it altogether. And they're still leaving the servers open. They're just saying, we're hoping that someone's going to create something incredible that we can make money off of.
Sure.
Which is true. I mean, you know, it's one thing to make a game that everybody plays, but when a publisher says, hey, you know what? We like what you're doing. Let's expand it. I mean, that's how Left 4 Dead was born. Okay, so the last news item is kind of weird. An analyst has found that pre-orders drive more sadness than anticipation. This comes from Games Industry Biz. Pre-order campaigns may drive sales, but they also may be driving sadness. That's according to Adobe Digital Index's U.S. Gaming Trends 2015, based on aggregated and anonymous data of billions of website visits and more than 20 million engagements on a variety of social media platforms. Released today, the report analyzed the social emotions expressed towards pre-orders. By far, the most common emotion associated with pre-orders was sadness at 33%, followed by joy, then admiration, disgust, and anticipation only accounted for 2% of the reactions, less than surprise, anger, but slightly ahead of fear. So let me ask you a question. Do pre-orders make you sad?
I don't think I particularly feel bad unless unless I have regret after the games come out and I'm like, oh, why did I pre-order this?
But, I'm wondering if they're saying just the announcement of pre-orders, how people react. You know, I mean, I would think at least joy and anticipation would be the number one emotions, if only because...
I'm definitely anticipating Fallout. I don't feel sad for that at all.
And you pre-ordered it, right?
Not yet, but I mean...
No, you don't count. That emotion doesn't count. We're talking about pre-orders here.
Actually doing the pre-order...
I guess disgust if you say, oh, God, look at that. That why wait for the reviews?
I'll probably get it day one, but, I mean, even if it's buggy, it'll be fine. It'll get patched, and, you know, it'll be fun.
I'm just trying to figure out people reacting to pre-orders, the announcement of pre-orders with sadness, like,
That's weird.
You mean, I think I know why, because it's like, oh no, see, I really want to get this game, but if I want this DLC for free, I have to pre-order it. That makes me feel sad. Or maybe that's the source of anger. Oh, I have to pre-order it just to...
And that's what I'm getting. It's like, you know, what if the Chinese love doing DLC? You
actually,
know?
That's
and
different than anger. That's disgust.
Okay.
Admiration, though. See, the admiration is different than anticipation. Yes, I admire that pre-order. What? I guess it maybe disgust at reaction of, oh, the $250 Halo 5 thing comes with just a big statue. You know, one of the things that people were upset by some of these major, and these are the most expensive ones, like the $250 for Halo, is that these pre-orders are not including the disc, they're just including a download code now for the game. And people are upset about that, but I sort of get it. Because one of the complaints when you have these big pre-order packages is that the disc is damaged. Especially if you have the metal scratched it or the statue damaged it, that sort of thing.
Then just kind of stay away from discs. Digital media is much better, much safer.
You know, actually, I know something that did disgust and surprise and anger was the fact that Halo 5 is going to be a 60-gigabyte game.
Oh, freak's sake.
That you have to download. It's not you download. Well, some people are going to be downloading it, obviously. But, you know, just from your disk, it's going to install the game 60 gigabytes.
Yikes.
But, you know...
Oh wow! So that's like to the Xbox hard drive, then.
That's a fifth of the launch one. Yeah, but you know what? It's Halo, and people are amazed at what's going on with the Forge, which, by the way, is going to be released. It's not going to be a day one release. The Forge, for those of you who don't know, the Forge is the map making thing. You know, in which you can create stuff, but that's okay. It's not going to be paid DLC. It's just going to be an update. So there's
that's,
that.
That's good, at least.
Yeah, I mean. You know, I don't know. You know, the season passes. You know, they're at once cool and also annoying. Because you have to figure out, am I going to spend $90 on this game?
Yeah, should I? Yeah, really.
That's what you ended up doing with Batman Arkham Asylum. You're spending $90 on a game, you know? Not Arkham Asylum. Batman Arkham Knight. So.
I didn't play any of those games, so...
Play Batman Arkham Asylum. I think you'll be pleasantly surprised. It's a really fun game. And do you like Batman the Animated Series?
Yes.
Okay, well, all the voices from the cartoon are in the game. Kevin Conroy's Batman, Mark Hamill is the Joker, everybody else who did their reprises their voices in that game. So it's basically you're playing a Batman the Animated Series game, except with realistic characters instead of cartoons. So, yeah, I mean, get the first one. Just the first one. I recommend just the first one, not the rest of them. And just play that one. You know, it's a nice game. You can even easily complete the Riddler challenge, unlike the other games, which is impossible. This one, you just requires that you just pick up everything as you go along. And it's on the map. Or, you know, you can actually see where they are on the map. So there's that, too. I mean, like I said, you know, you have to get Batman Arkham Asylum for $5 on Steam. Just plug in a 360 controller.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways.
Yeah, I got a controller.
Okay. So anyways, we do have listener feedback. It's very short. It's from Bobby X, and it's, hey, Scott, do you play handheld or mobile?
I would say more handheld. I love the DS. I played the Layton games, especially all six of them, and just playing the prequel was very emotional because I think it had a really strong story compared to the first trilogy that they had. So it was just a stronger character development and really just left me just like wrecked. And I played them out of order. I played the second game first, then to the third, and then to the prequel trilogy, and then I played the actual first game, which was kind of interesting because the prequel.
Well, you'd have little rival spoilers, now wouldn't you? I mean,
I'm not going to spoil. I'm just saying.
No, I'm just saying playing the sequels before the original thing, you're basically spoiling it for yourself because they'll assume that you'd played the first game, wouldn't they?
Well, that's the point is like the. The last prequel game ends on a very big epic note, and I was just remembering how a lot of people feel like, well, how can you go on from there? And you go and play the next game, and the character, you know, he says this line, it's like, you should be excited, because this is an entirely unique and exciting experience. And he's basically saying, it's like, yeah, I know it's just this big epic thing here, but here's this new story, this new thing we're going to go do, you know, even though, and it's new. So it's like, it's not about topping it. It's just different and new, and just you can progress. Okay. I just liked that feeling, the way they did that. It was just really neat. So it was more than just a puzzle game. It was a really good story. I just really liked it. And I played Animal Crossing, and I played the Dragon Warrior 9, and I played...
You know the dark fan theories about Animal Crossing, don't you? That you're a little boy who's been kidnapped by these people in animal clothes, and they're forcing you to work for them, and you only start out with a hovel, and you're basically being strong-armed for money and all that stuff. It's true. That's the fan theory about that game.
Or you can just let the whole town go to crap, not do a single thing, watch all the grass grow.
Well, I guess it's better than the than Pokemon Red and Blue happen after a major war, and that's why there's no adults. There's almost no adults in the town, and kids are running around free with fighting animals.
I think people are thinking too hard on this.
No, there are a lot of fan theories about these things, and some of them are. You know, but it adds to the experience if you think about it. You know, yeah. If you want to think of yourself as a slave to these terrible people in your little animal town, you know.
I don't think of myself as a slave because I write nasty letters to the characters I don't like.
Oh, that's good. Okay, so look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with ministry news and our gaming history articles. If you enjoy our feedback, leave us comments on our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast, the forums at GamingPodcast.net/forum, or send your comments to fans@GamingPodcast.net. Subscribe to us on iTunes, leave us some iTunes comments. I am @JonahFalcon, and he is @AlphaShard.
Happy gaming, everyone.